Right now it is time to bring in our friends from theberkshireedge.com. It is the Berkshire Edge on air. But of course, what we touch on here is just a fraction of the stories that you'll find 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at theberkshireedge.com. Marcy and David, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Here we are.
David, are you there?
David, hello?
David is here.
Yeah, I'm here.
David is here.
Don't sound so thrilled, David.
you don't have to do the show.
So,
please.
I'm here.
He's here.
All right. Well, we were talking about bizarre stories, so we're going to start off with another bizarre story, and that is the story of the convicted drug dealer of Great Barrington who is now suing the town.
Yes, for $750,000, and he's not only suing the town, he's also suing the local hospital.
Wow. Now, what are the details behind this story?
Well, he was arrested in 2013 and convicted, actually, of stealing drugs and sent off to prison. But he's now been, now that he's back, this is a lawsuit he's bringing himself, by the way.
He's representing himself and he's written it himself.
Right. And he's been in trouble. He's just one of these troubled individuals, you know, that is just taken it on himself to defend himself in this bizarre way.
Well, so.
But in any case, the town is now going to have to defend, you know, this is in federal court. So
he claims that, first of all, I mean, that his girlfriend's mother brought the police to his attention, what's the correct word? I mean, first his girlfriend's mother called the police because she was afraid for her daughter in Babcock's car. And then when the police pulled him over, he claims that they beat him. They beat him with a stick. They broke his leg, he claims.
Mm-hmm.
And they mistreated him. And then they took him to the hospital because he was showing signs of drug overdose. And the doctors gave him some medications, chemical restraints, he said, and he claimed that they ignored his broken leg and they refused to give him proper treatment and they gave him dangerous drugs, so he's still in the hospital as well. But he had also been, you know, years earlier, in 2004, he was one of suspect in what a famous police sting in Great Barrington, where the DA arrested a bunch of teenagers supposedly selling drugs in a drug-free school zone. There's great suspicion of these, you know, this is a sting, and there were trumped-up charges. But he was one of them, and he also pleaded guilty on those charges. So he's, yeah, he's been somebody who is, he's been in trouble all along, but you know, he's taken it upon himself now to sue the town and the hospital. So and unfortunately, the town and the hospital have to pay a lawyer to defend themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bizarre story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's, you know, it's when you have to pay a lawyer to defend yourselves and you think that it is a frivolous or if it's a suit that has no chance. I mean, it happened to us when a local assistant superintendent decided to go to the FCC and make a claim which was totally false. Everybody knew it was false and knew it wasn't going to fly, but it ended up costing us $10,000 in legal fees.
We had the same problem.
Yeah.
It's,
local, you know, competitor. came up with a harassment suit against us.
You know, and you have to hire a lawyer, and you have to defend yourself,
you do.
Even though you know you're right, and you know that there's
right.
it's just one of those terrible things. Hey, I want to go to good news, though. And I've been following the history of VCR LP. For folks that don't know, there is a classification of radio stations that are for communities, local, small, like 10-watt, 100-watt stations.
Low power.
Yeah, and VCR LP at one time was a full functioning and had just an amazing array of local folks on the air. And that all went away. And they even had a, I don't know if you guys know this, they had a license to go to be a full-power radio station at one point.
Yes, I knew, but they didn't have the money to.
Do it, which is too bad.
Yeah, and they needed to, they needed a more robust transmitter, too.
Yeah, it would have cost it. They tried to raise $27,000 to do it and couldn't do it. And it's too bad. But it's good to see that they're back now in business, and hopefully they'll get back to having the amount of volunteers that they used to have.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, they're getting a studio which will be quite visible on Main Street.
Yeah, right near the big corner, the corner of Main and Railroad in Great Barrington. They'll be right there.
So that's going to be great. They're going to be able to, people are going to be able to look in the window and see, you know, the radio, you know, them operating their station and drop in. So that's, actually, I had that idea for a newspaper, actually, one time. So I'm glad to see, I think it might work. We'll see.
Well, it'll be very exciting to have our, you know, this local station.
People don't understand, though, we're an NPR station. We only carry about 3 or 4, maybe 5 NPR shows. The rest are all local people, and they've been with us. People have had 350, 400 shows under their belt. They've been with us so long, and so that's what makes community radio great. But you also need to fundraise, and I think that's where they've always come up short, and hopefully people on their board will be able to fundraise in the Great Barrington community to show that it really is great to have a small local community station. I'm not dissing WSBS. They're a great station. Don't get me wrong. They do a lot of good stuff. But when you have
But
when you can open up the airwaves and have a lot of different programming from a lot of different local people, it really makes it more interesting.
Well, it's what we're doing on the edge.
Yep.
You know, we're kind of the equivalent. You know, we are a small community-based online newspaper where we're welcoming voices from throughout the community. It's a very different model from the other newspapers in the community, and people have appreciated what we're doing. So it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, that's why.
It's our intention to be the voice of the community, and it's also that intention for the WBCR. So
I wish I wish them well, and I hope that they succeed, because it's a great idea, and it's just a smaller version of what we do here. And it's a lot of work. Now that's the problem with it. It's a lot of work. And you two know, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of hours, and you really have to love what you do, and you're not ever going to make a ton of money. It's just the way it is. You know, so I wish them luck, and I hope that that they succeed with this new reincarnation.
They seem to have some younger people involved, which will be nice, and I think that's going to be a key if they can get young people
and keep them involved. And that's the whole thing: keep them involved.
Right.
That's right. And heck, you know what? Put caution to wind, experiment a little bit. So I hope that it all works out well.
But you know what they did? I think before they went off the air, they involved the high school kids. The high school kids themselves have a little radio operation going and broadcast classes, and so they involve them as well. And so the high school will be able to, students will be able to have a show too.
Excellent.
But it's interesting. You just it will be interesting to see who comes forward now with shows, because you can, anybody who has an idea for a show can do it, you know.
So we'll see. We'll see
it's
what
sort
happens.
Of like, public access on cable too. That you know, anybody who has an idea for a show can come forward.
Well, they have to be responsible and do it.
Yeah. And do it, right.
But still, I wish we wish them luck because I think it's a great idea. Hey, Berkshire County District Attorney is in the news again, calling for the end of cash bail.
Yes.
Oh, Andrea Harrington, she's fulfilling
a campaign
promise to reform, you know, the local,
DA's
office. And criminal justice, and this is one of the reform items that she had on her agenda. She said that that if cash bails, the current cash bail system creates what she calls an unequal tier of justice in America. So she's been hailed by many people for being on the forefront of criminal justice reform, so that she's going to have a new approach to that. This is for non-dangerous offenses, and the reason you have a bail system is to make sure that they show up in court. But she thinks that for non-dangerous offenses, she feels that they will return if we have a slightly different system, and she doesn't want them. She put a languishing in jail simply because they can't afford to post bail.
Yeah, no, this is not a new idea. I mean, I worked in New York many years ago for an organization called the Vera Institute of Justice, and they had developed for the city of New York in the 70s something called the Vera Summons, where they had it was a checklist of qualifications, and if you qualified in certain number of those items, then you'd be released on your own recognizance, because the man who ran Vera had noticed that there were people who were languishing in the Tombs, which is the pretrial detention facility in New York City, who had not been convicted, but they were often in jail longer than their possible conviction would have warranted because they couldn't post bail. And so, if you had roots in the community, if you had a job, if you had family, there were all these things that would indicate that you were unlikely to flee, then you'd be released on your own recognizance. And it was very enlightened in the 1970s. It should have happened a long time ago here.
Yeah.
All right. But it is interesting.
And by the way, I want to go back to the other story for just a second because I knew I had a public service announcement in here. They're having a reboot Kickstarter launch party at the barn at the Egremont Village Inn on Thursday. That's tomorrow, from six till 9 p.m. So, if you live in that area and you want to support him, this is a way where they can get some money under their belt at the barn tomorrow night. I just wanted to go back because I knew I had something in my file.
Oh, yes.
Good. I'm glad you got that in. That's good.
Yeah, we should have said that, too. But it is also all the information is on our site, so people can go and find the details.
TheBerkshireEdge.com, everybody.
Yes, TheBerkshireEdge.com, right.
Yeah.
All right. I want to move on to the culmination of the celebration of W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Last Saturday, in the Congregational Church in Great Barrington, there was just a big celebration for W.E.B. Du Bois. This is the end of 6 weeks of noting and honoring one of the most famous residents former residents of Great Barrington, W.E.B. Du Bois, the founder of the NAACP and a scholar and writer, and there was a performance and speeches and it was packed. And it's good to see the community celebrating this, Du Bois, because his people have always been a little there's been a history in Great Barrington of resisting resisting acknowledgement of his value to the community.
Or to the world.
And I mean, to the world.
It's not clear what his value to the community was if the community refused to acknowledge him. But certainly, I mean, he was, you know, he's a worldwide important public figure. And this is interesting that the event took place in a congregational church, because it really was the congregational church that supported him way back when. I mean, he, you know, the important men in the congregational church recognized this talent in this young African-American boy, and they paid for his education. They sent him first to Fisk and then to Harvard. And he was supported by the community and especially by the congregational church. And in recent years, there's been a reluctance on the part of the church to, you know, to embrace him in the same way that they did earlier. So this is nice that the event was in the congregational church. And we have on our site, we have video of the event.
Yeah.
We have, so, I mean, this is one of the great things about online publishing, that, you know, we have video of the speeches and the performances. And, I mean, it was really very exciting. And the head of the NAACP spoke, of course, you know. Du Bois started the NAACP.
And he was part of the Harlem Renaissance whose members were living here, as it turned out.
Right across the street from us,
actually. So it's good that the community recognizes this particular aspect of its legacy.
It's interesting. I'm looking at the lead for the next story, and what you gave me was Tired of New England winter writer and journalist Andrew Lushman takes us on a tour of Florida's West Coast. It's, and you've got from Naples to Fort Myers, but had he gone further north to Tallahassee and up around there, he would have been in the Redneck Riviera.
Yes, right, that's right.
But the West Coast of Florida is totally different than the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, apparently not so anymore.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I had an aunt who lived on the west coast of Florida, and not in Naples or Fort Myers. She was in Sarasota, and it's really a beautiful place.
Oh, it's always been a beautiful place.
But Andrew is, I mean, it's a very funny article. I was laughing out loud when I read it. He talks about, the strip mauling of this beautiful coast of Florida, and how you barely have to turn around and you're at another Walmart. So it's a very funny article. And
however, we got a big reaction to it.
Yeah,
there were people who from Florida who read this that were not happy, including, I think, the town manager of Fort Myers was not happy at all.
Well, the whole thing about the west coast of Florida, and it's not the whole west coast of Florida, is that it does resemble a lot of Myrtle Beach. But maybe a higher price Myrtle Beach. You know what I mean? It's not quite like Myrtle Beach, but it is where the East Coast is commercialized. It seems to be spread out and not as brazenly bad as it is on the West Coast, where they were talking about that. But I still think it's a funny story, and it's a great story.
It is a very funny. It's a very funny story.
It is.
And you guys have.
I must say that in a few weeks, my son is going to Sanibel.
Well, just
with some friends. That is a little preserve island. So he's going to be. He's not going to necessarily be ensconced in this in the region that Blackman Andrew is talking about.
Well, just don't let him mention the Berkshire Edge, because otherwise,
I know.
All right, let's go to the final story that you've got here. This is a pretty cool story about the restaurateurs who have a different concept on Meals on Wheels.
Well, yes, they do. This is an interesting group of couple of restaurants that are offering, to deliver, and you can order your meals, and they will come and deliver it. And uh, it's it's a way to sort of get them through the winter blues, you know, where restaurants, everything kind of shuts down a little bit here, you know, in the winter. These little restaurants over in just in the hills here in Monterey have dreamed up another way to survive the winter, and they're really good ones too, and kind of cute. The roadside cafe is really famous, it's one of them. And this is a really interesting approach, very inventive, I think.
Well, you know, some of
it's like takeout.
Yeah.
Only it comes to you. I mean, which is, you know, one of the things that we former New Yorkers do miss, that you can't order and have food delivered.
But it's from our two great Italian restaurants which deliver, which are Mises and Dino's. But they do deliver within a 10-15 mile radius of their shops. But you really would love to have a Chinese restaurant that would do that around here.
That deliver, right?
Yes, I mean,
or Vietnamese, or you know, or
go over the whole list here. But it's a little hard. But you know, we're getting there slowly but surely, I guess.
We are.
Who knows?
Well,
if enough people pick up, become Uber drivers up here, they can Uber food delivery.
That would be
nice.
Also, these particular restaurants are also associated with the, you know, sustainable agriculture movement here too. So this is these family meals that they are offering are really healthy. You know, this is good. This is good food. I think it's really interesting that in this rural area that this little delivery service is taking root. You know.
Yeah. No, it is.
I think if somebody's an entrepreneur and does this thing with either Uber or Lyft or any of them, where they actually go to restaurants and pick up food and deliver, I think that would be a burgeoning service around here for and people would take advantage of it.
Well, and more than that, you know, the whole idea of transportation on demand also is, you know, is something that would be, you know, it's hard to get a taxi here, but if we had more drivers that people could call, it would be very, I think, you know, for older people, especially in the winter, even in the summer, it would be great to, you know, if you can't drive yourself, to be able to call somebody would be wonderful.
All right. Now, I just don't, in the next week, I don't want you guys getting anybody else in South Florida upset at you.
No. Well,
I mean, who knew that, by the way, that the people in that the officials in Fort Myers would be picking this up?
Well, there are a lot of people from the Berkshires who go to Naples. You know, we have a lot of readers in Florida in the winter.
So just
and
remember,
many, there's a whole community of former, or not former, but Berkshireites who winter in Naples on the West Coast.
And it's the same thing.
Also in Sarasota. I haven't heard that many from Fort Myers, but obviously there are enough.
There's a group from North Canaan, Connecticut that are in that area as well, and they all get together, and it's like North Canaan mini moves down to Florida for the wintertime and then back up. Well, we're out of time already, but all these stories and more, theberkshireedge.com.
Yes.
All right. We will speak to you too next
week.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air here on Robin Hood Radio. And you'll find them, as I said, at theberkshireedge.com.